Gillies.
Gilmore Girls.
And boys, we got something to tell you about.
So come in close, because we got a secret.
Let me tell you a little secret. We're doing shows in New York City in July. So we have a show at the Bell House on July 13th at 7:30 p.m. That is already sold out. But we are adding a second late show at 10:30 p.m. at the Bell House. And tickets are on sale for that right now. So you can go to thebellhouseny.com and get those tickets.
Is it
Bell House NY?
We're not doing this again. It's okay. The Bell House NY.
It is thebellhouseny.com. And because it's, well, you want to take that.
Unfortunately,
part.
That show is 21 plus because we have a great opening bit where we're going to go, hey, everyone, stick your hands in the air. We're going to toss alcohol and not check IDs.
And not care.
Yes. We're going to let people register to vote. A lot of stuff is happening that we legally can't do.
We can't get into it.
I'm sorry.
But
that's not true. But
if you're under the age of 21, we got good news for you. Because that sounded creepy. That sounded creepy at first. My apologies.
The good news is Kevin wants to meet you.
I want to meet each and every one of you. No. The good news is that we're doing another show in New York City at the UCB Chelsea. That's going to be Wednesday, July the 15th at 8 p.m. And we're going to do something a little special for that. We may not do an episode like we usually do.
Yeah.
We may do something even more special.
So you won't be missing out. Or maybe you will.
Or maybe you will. You know, let's not frame it like that.
Let's not.
But we're doing that. Yeah, and then also,
it's going to be different.
It's going to be different. And also, just a stars holla out to ATX Festival. That's this coming Sunday, June the 7th.
Yep.
And for that, the episode we're going to be doing is episode 413, Nag Hammadi is where they found the Gnostic Gospels, which might be the longest episode title. It's the Fiona Apple album of Gilmore Girls episode titles.
When the
titles.
Apple is long...
So, to recap, Bell House, 7:30 on July 13th, sold out. 10:30 on 7:13, not sold out. Buy tickets for that now. UCB, New York, Chelsea, 7:15, 8 p.m., not on sale yet, but look for, on our Twitter and our Facebook for that to go out.
Austin, Texas, episode 413, Sunday.
Sunday.
Oh, my God. This Sunday. Saturday is the reunion. Sunday is the live show. We might be dead because of how well the reunion went.
And how much we partied and did selfies with Scott Patterson.
Right. Yeah. And all of the times that we just went around the town going, hey, stick your hands up in the air. We're not checking IDs. Here's some tequila. It's a thing we love to do.
It's like our trademark at this
413,
point.
413, Nag Hammadi, Fiona Apple. I haven't seen it yet. Who knows what happens? Maybe someone dies. Hope not.
Or maybe someone comes back.
Okay, what? Well, now it's spoiled for me. Thanks.
Sorry.
Let's get to the episode.
Okay. I've heard pink pajamas, penguins on the bottom.
Then there are lyrics, because somebody goes like, in the home.
From the day we arrive on the planet.
I wish I was a mighty king. Enemies beware.
That's skipping ahead.
Yeah. I skip ahead.
What's our cold open?
Is this not it?
That? Okay.
No.
You always say no. Episode 406. It's an affair to remember.
That's the title of this one. You looked at me like, what is he doing? Like, we don't do this every
episode. Well, because I did temporarily forget the title of the episode. Welcome to Gilmore, guys. I'm Kevin.
I'm Dimmy.
And we are... The Gilmore Guys. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, unlike anything I've ever talked about on the air, I actually stand by Squarespace. I actually do because I've used it for everything I've made. Literally, GilmoreGuysShow.com, the very website for this very podcast, was made using Squarespace. How beautiful is that? KevinTPorter.com, I made that using Squarespace. My old bake shop website, that was made using Squarespace, because you can do it all with Squarespace. You can sell content on your website, so exclusive stuff behind a paywall. You can sell memberships, courses, or sell files your customers can download, like PDFs, music, or ebooks. You can do that with Squarespace. You can do analytics with Squarespace, so you can figure out who's visiting your website and why, and figure out how to get traffic and where's it coming from. You can also have people do flexible payments on Squarespace. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accepts credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. How nice is that? You can also do email campaigns, so there's constant outreach for your stuff and people know where to find you. So I'm going to let you know where to find Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys. Guys, thank you for joining us for another episode. Gillies, thank you so much. I'm not sure where this is falling on the episode schedule now, because we might be doing the thing where we're doing two a week, but only one episode of the show a week. I don't know. But whenever you're listening to it, welcome. Hopefully nothing bad has happened.
Right.
No, like, tragedy has happened that we're not addressing.
Oh, if
it's,
I'm
like,
dead
weird
by the time this episode comes out, you know.
What if you died in between episode? Like, I would feel weird releasing it.
You should release it, first of all. And second of all, now I'm just going to casually mention my death in every episode so people would be like, whoa, that's crazy. He, almost as if he knew.
He knew. He knew.
Just
on
in
some
case.
Level. Oh, boy. But we got a lot to talk about. This is a fun ep. And one we watched pretty recently.
Yeah.
So let's just introduce our guest. Let's stop gilly-gallying around and introduce our guest right now.
Lala.
Lala.
A special guest. Well, you know this gentleman from such shows as 30 Rock and The Newsroom. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Keith Powell.
Hello. Oh, I get a welcome with a clap. That's
yay.
It's quite lovely.
We tried to build up people's expectations for the guest super high.
And self-esteem.
And then your job is to fulfill those expectations.
Well.
Keith, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure.
So you are new to the show.
Very new.
Very new to the show. You've never seen an episode before today.
Absolutely not. Completely brand spanking new. My wife has seen every episode and has told me about them.
Mm-hmm.
But my only reference to Gilmore Girls, there were two times that I've heard about Gilmore Girls before today. And that was once when Melissa McCarthy came on, I think we were watching Mike and Molly, and my wife goes, oh, she's from Gilmore Girls. And then Alexis Bledel was in Mad Men.
Yeah.
And that somebody told me that she was in Gilmore Girls as well. So that's as new as I am to it.
Yeah. So you have no expectations or preconceived notions.
Correct.
You came in with an open heart and an open mind.
Yes, very open.
Ready to receive whatever.
Yeah.
So sounds good. Well, let's get into the episode discussion. This is episode 406, An Affair to Remember. Which I actually don't know why it's called that.
That's the name of a movie.
It's the name of a movie. Yeah,
maybe that there was no affair, or maybe it's the date that happens.
Kirk's date?
With Kirk.
Hmm. Yeah, but even that's kind of
weird. Seems like so small, yeah.
But so maybe the affair is that it never happened.
Yeah.
An affair
to never forget.
You could have remembered if it occurred, right. But that wouldn't fit in TV Guide. Maybe they should have called it A Tree to Remember. That would have been more thing. A Tree to Remember.
I wonder what the plot of An Affair to Remember is. Maybe it's about something that gets canceled.
We're going to get so many.
Yeah, don't, guys.
We should look it up while this episode is happening
because
so we don't get so many.
If we don't, people are going to be like, this is so embarrassing that you don't know this, but An Affair to Remember.
Isn't the Affair to Remember the one where they meet on the Empire State Building? At the top of the Empire State Building.
Is it?
It
looks like it.
Or is that a Walk to
yes.
Remember?
Yes. Yes? Did I get that right?
Woo! Yeah.
Yes!
They agree to reunite at the Empire State Building in 6 months' time if they've ended their relationship.
Yes!
Yeah, that has nothing to do with this.
Oh, then, no. Oh. Then what probably it's in reference to is, I don't know, I obviously haven't seen the show, so do they, the people at the man and the woman at the end, Lorelai and
Digger.
The dude, do they start dating?
I assume they go on a date, and it probably goes disastrously. And this is me just guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no. And I wouldn't put it on them to name the entire episode after that one moment.
Well, you know, maybe it was foreshadowing for future episodes, you know.
Now, it looks like it was referenced pretty heavily in Gossip Girl. But this isn't Gossip Girl.
Someone named
this
the show.
This ain't Gossip Girl.
Incorrectly.
Yes. I truly wonder why. Maybe it's in the little Bible we have over there. We'll check it out. But for now, we're really dumb and we don't know why.
All right, you can tweet at us.
Tweet at Demi.
No.
Are you on Twitter anymore?
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
I don't worry about it.
Okay. Are you coming back?
Don't worry about it.
Wow.
Did you Joss Whedon it?
No.
You Joss Whedoned it? Did someone say all your tweets were sexist and so you had to leave Twitter?
It was me. I was like, God, I got to stop saying the C word on Twitter so much. And then I deleted
it. Oh, no.
That's not.
Oh, man.
You got
so then happened. You turned into the black dude who's going to take over The Daily Show then.
Yes. I Trevor Noah'd it.
Trevor Noah'd it.
You Trevor Noah'd it.
But the good news is I'm taking over The Daily Show now. So everything's great.
You would be so good on The Daily Show.
I would be a train wreck.
No, it's like a field correspondent. You'd be so good. You'd be so good.
Hashtag... Demi for Daily Show.
Well, too bad they can't include you in it because you're not on freaking...
Well, still just say hashtag Demi for Daily
Manzuka
Show.
Manzuka sing it up.
And at Electro Lemon.
Oh, boy. Electro Lemon.
And then I'll come back when there's enough ground. I'm kidding.
So this episode is written by Amy Sherman-Palladino herself.
The Dino.
Directed by Matthew Diamond. The Netflix synopsis is Emily hires Lorelai and Suki. Should I try to do it like the WB guy does it?
Yeah.
All the promos. Emily hires Lorelai and Suki to cater an elaborate launch party for Richard's new company. Zydeco music. But insists they prove that they are worthy of her trust. Which is... very beside the point. Whatever.
I have a slight non sequitur though.
Sure.
This is a little off topic, but the WB at one point, I believe, made all of their employees answer the phone. Hello, this is the WB.
Oh my God.
Have we not talked about that on the show?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Do they still do that?
No, because it's the CW.
Oh, boy.
And I would be like, if I worked there, my God,
you would hate it.
Hate my life.
Oh.
WB. Why would you? I would just not. I'd be like, I'm not calling anymore. I'm sorry.
Because it doesn't be the UPN.
Right.
It's just because that damn frog.
Yeah.
Who is probably. Has anyone checked in on him? Is he doing okay?
I don't think he's.
They
doing
released
well.
Him into the wild. Again.
He hasn't gotten a lot of work.
I think he's
since.
In rehab.
Yeah,
I would love to see animated celebrity rehab.
That's right.
Who's there besides Philip J. Frog?
Tweety, Affleck Duck's not doing so hot anymore.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the Affleck Duck,
Tweety,
the Butt Eyes
Insurance
Penguin.
Baby,
Cookie Monster. Well, no, he's not a cartoon.
Cookie Monster's.
He's a real person.
Shout out.
Yeah.
What's
that? He's having a resurgence though. Cookie Monster. He's coming back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's being rehabilitated. Well, let's get into the episode discussion with a little segment we call Pop
Goes
the
Culture,
where we take every single pop culture reference in the episode and cut them together in a supercut and then listen back and say, like, what's going on with that? What's going on?
What's the deal? Happening?
What's the deal? So this is episode 406, An Affair to Remember, Pop Goes the Culture.
Is that Condoleezza Rice?
Yes, it is. I'm a fan, and her big mouth is perfect for shoving mail in.
And find out what Jason's going to wear. I don't want the two of you showing up looking like the Bobbsey twins.
Oh, yes, that would be embarrassing.
This is Citizen Kane's house.
Drape one of those napkins over my arm.
I was doing my John Cryer from Pretty in Pink impression.
Ducky?
Yes, Ducky.
Were you near the end of the movie yet?
No, just getting to the Try a Little Tenderness moment.
Well, every family has a Fredo.
Yeah, and Fredo's family put two in the back of his head.
Oh, well, that's a good story. Hans Christian Andersen?
I assume you'll instruct your service to omit the Pinocchio humor.
Liv Tyler grew up her entire life thinking Todd Rundgren was her real father. It is a gig. It's Prince opening for the Rolling Stones. She's probably been cackling into her magic mirror all morning.
Say I was Tom Cruise, where would you seat me?
In an acting class.
Boom.
He's quiet, but not Unabomber, and
you think he was already president, and I don't want to be Hillary. I don't want to wait for 100 years while he does his thing, so by the time I get my chance, I'm too old to enjoy it.
Well, I don't think Hillary's too old to enjoy
yes.
it.
Storm Room has turned into a Three Stooges movie. Shove Pop-Tarts under the door in 2 hours, please.
Prescient Hillary reference.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Woo.
I wish they'd just turn to the camera and be like, oh, she's not too old.
I think the time is now.
First of all, you guys got so many pop culture references in that I actually, there were so many that I forgot that they were all those references. Yeah. And second, I forgot what it was like to live in a Republican regime.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It is a weird blast from the past because this is it's a Bush era show. It was only on for 7 seasons and it was 2000 to 2007.
Yeah.
But pre-Obama.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But Obama becomes a big part of season 7.
Great.
Yeah, he becomes a
spoiler.
Character. Spoiler.
Now, Lorelai, I don't know how I feel about you letting Rory go off to school with these boys.
Oh, wow.
That's not great.
Wow. Good grief. Yeah, so, and what was the other one? Oh, the Pop-Tarts got a shout-out at the end. We haven't heard from them in a bit.
The Godfather got a shout-out.
Godfather gets referenced a lot on this show.
Yeah, really?
Quite a bit, yeah.
I'm quite impressed by that.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah, they have their few, they go every which way with references, but there's a few that they always return to, I feel like.
Yeah,
they always
Mussolini.
Mussolini. Yeah, actually, that's
El Duce. Like every other, it used to be every other episode.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that's the show.
Yeah, and Godfather. They always make Sofia Coppola jokes.
Yeah,
about Godfather
amazing.
3.
I don't know who their audience was.
It was them. They made it for themselves. Right. Here's one thing that bugged me. Okay, about pop culture references. So this has to do with the previous episode where Lorelai takes Luke and was like, oh, you need to see movies. They're like, I haven't seen any movie. I've seen Mr. and Mrs. Bridge. That's right. It or whatever.
Wow.
And then this one.
Merchant Ivory.
Yeah.
By the way, that's kind of awesome. Sorry.
Oh, but in this one, he's like, oh, Pretty in Pink, Ducky, got it.
Yeah.
Like, he knows exactly.
I've seen two movies.
I think it just needs to be assumed that everyone in this universe, in this magical Amy Sherman-Palladino universe, has seen every movie, seen every TV show, knows every musical artist, and that way it's not unrealistic. Just establish that some way. Because Luke goes from being a dum-dum with movies to being Leonard Maltin.
Well, maybe John maybe Hughes' kind of filmography. He gets all the references that are in the zeitgeist, but he hasn't seen the movies.
Oh, just like you with Good Will Hunting.
Exactly. No, I've seen it. It's my favorite movie.
Oh, okay.
I love Good Will Hunting. It's my favorite movie.
Wow. Great.
Wow, impressive.
Oh, man. So, man, a lot to love in this episode. I enjoyed this way more than the previous one.
Yeah.
It always helps. It always
well,
helps.
Everybody.
Oops, sorry. Actually, I'll just play that clip.
Well, everybody hated Taco.
The dog.
Yeah. The chihuahua. That,
that was painted orange.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Everyone hated Taco.
And a bit prescient that it's named Taco.
Yeah, so we talked in the last episode about how the Lorelai and Emily conflict felt stilted, kind of felt forced or false in the previous one because it didn't resonate. There wasn't the gravity there. Emily seemed like she was going too far and Lorelai was being out of control too.
Right.
But the writer or whoever was ultimately responsible for that episode didn't seem to get Emily. But I feel like this episode is such a good crystallized example of how to get this character, which is like brash and hot, very demanding and it's fun for that reason. Like there's comedy there. But then there's also not too far beneath the surface, a very palpable pain and a very palpable need to be needed and a desire for relevance and struggling for that in a new world.
I'd never seen it before, but I very much got what she had to deal with all of her life and with that. And I thought it was actually quite touching to see her, that scene that you know, where she comes to her daughter's house and says, you know, oh, it's fine. You know what? I'm playing the good wife. This is fine.
Mm-hmm.
That nobility, I kind of saw what she valued all growing up and what made her a little difficult.
Yeah. And she comes from a totally different time
where
she doesn't really know how to function in Jason's new world of Atlantic City parties. Does that sound like
sounds like an awful idea.
Yeah.
Today, yesterday, 3 weeks from now, that is never a current idea.
No.
Atlantic City.
Also,
wake up with a hooker.
I imagine all of the coworkers, all of Richard's, like all the people they want to take are probably closer to Richard's age. They probably, like if they go, it seems like
they're all going to die of heart attacks.
Yeah, it's not their sort of thing.
Yeah.
Not so good. So Digger, he's insensitive. People hate Digger. I mean, that's been established.
Don't like him.
Yeah, you don't like him.
Are you a fan? I didn't see enough of him in this episode to say one way or the other.
He's a slickster.
Yeah.
He's a real, oh my God, you've grown up so well, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Here's one joke I didn't get when I was a kid watching this show. She calls him Digger, which is his nickname. He calls her umlauts.
I don't get that.
Do you guys know what the umlaut is?
Yeah, the two dots.
So
the umlauts, yeah.
Right. So he, the canoe, She was wearing a green t-shirt.
Oh, my God.
No bra. It is.
Oh, my God. Oh,
wow.
Wow, that is a light bulb moment right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Right?
Oh, that's, damn. No,
that had to have gone like past the censors.
Yeah.
Even.
It's a damn. Wet t-shirt joke.
That is awesome.
That is. I'm impressed by that.
I'm yeah. very impressed.
All right, I like Digger again.
I was about to say, yeah, you know, like he became cool.
Yeah, he's my favorite character now. Yeah, but how about that?
That's insane. I didn't... How did you even come to that conclusion? I would have never. In
how old
years.
Were they to have come up with umlauts? Like, how old were they?
Well, it was summer camp.
That's pretty advanced.
High school?
That's pretty advanced for that age, I gotta say.
Rich yeah. people. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the kids in the cabin he was describing just was a German
it.
Boy.
And he's looks like a little umlaut over
we
the
would,
U.
We right. would call her
I mean,
umlauts.
Because I feel like a high school kid, like just a horny high school kid would just be like, honkers. Yeah, yeah just yeah. call her honkers.
Hey,
yeah,
look, honkers over there. right. No, umlauts. Right, I'll hunt her for years.
Pretty sophisticated.
From now on, I will refer to you the way that we refer to vowels that we pronounce as the letter themselves.
Yeah.
You're going to be umlauts.
Ding, ding, ding.
And everyone's
so,
just like, umlauts, umlauts.
Definitely. I don't know. I want to see a camp full of children chanting umlauts. I had a girl getting out of a leg she was just pushed into. Oh, my goodness man. Gracious. So there's that. And that's something that definitely... I think someone, you know, I didn't even get it upon the rewatch. It was someone on Twitter that pointed it out to
wow.
us.
Wow, that's pretty sophisticated.
Yeah. So yeah, pretty. That's a slow burn joke. Yeah. 12 years later, I'm like, all right.
Do we have any backstory as to why Digger is called Digger?
Did
we get any?
I think we might get some later. Okay. I'm totally forgetting about that. I do believe you do. Oh, here's one thing before I forget about it. Here's a joke I just want to play.
You never called me back.
I'll call you back now. What's your number?
976 bite me.
Okay, so one of the first lines in the pilot of The West Wing is Sam Seaborn, as played by Rob Lowe, talking to a reporter. And he's like, give me the information. The information, blah, blah, blah. Talking about something. And then Rob Lowe says, well, you can call 1-800-BITE-ME. It's a very similar joke.
Yeah, but I actually think that Sorkin has used the 1-800-BITE-ME joke in many of his shows. I think I saw that in like a supercut of Aaron Sorkin things.
Oh, really?
Oh, boy.
I made it.
He made
oh,
that
did you do
cut.
That?
Yeah, yeah. I made that
supercut. Well, my hat's off to you, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So no, he's done bite me a bunch. 1-800. It's the United Brotherhood. It was in American President. He says, "I'm calling the United Organization of It's None of Your Damn Business."
Of It's None of Your Damn Business.
I'm going to the Church of I Hate You.
By the way, when I got booked to do Newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
I watched those supercuts.
Whoa.
Yeah, I really did.
Wait, I think this is the first Sorkin actor we've talked to that's
probably.
Spoken
maybe.
The
maybe.
The bard. Not the bard. What would we call him?
The
guy. The guy. The scribe. I've not talked to a Sorkin actor about
boy.
That. Like, yeah. what was that experience like going on to that show?
It was...
Because you were in season 3, correct?
Yeah, I was in the last season
HR
for two
guy.
Episodes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
HR guy who messes with...
with Tommy's character.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what I got hired to do. Yeah. I mean, like, that's what I was told to do.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't... There's no spoiler in that.
But. Was it tough to get your head around the language, or did it come pretty naturally?
No. I always thought it would be, you know, watching Sorkin's work over the years. And I'm sorry to, divulge from...
No, I'm driving it there.
Yeah. We do it all the time.
But I always thought that it... would be difficult, just watching it as a fan. But when I got the scripts,
mm-hmm.
it actually was remarkably easy because once you get into his rhythm. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm a person who is really, I'm really bad at learning lines. Like everybody always calls me out on that. But once I got into the rhythm, and when you are on set, you cannot divert from a word.
It's got to be
word
perfect.
It has to be word perfect. So I was very scared about that. And I, but it, once you figure out the rhythm, it locks in very, very easy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was really cool to do that.
and you said, hey, I saw the supercuts. Nice going.
Hey.
Hey, bro.
You kind of repeat yourself.
I told you I heard from him about that, right?
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Yeah.
What did he say? I don't remember.
He said, I'll destroy you. No, he didn't say that. He said, he reached out to me through his publicist and said that he watched it and he really, really enjoyed it and thought it was funny. And he was like total class act about it.
Yeah.
So.
No, he's a classy dude.
Yeah.
He's a really classy dude. I liked him.
Also a dude from a different time. Like he has an office and he always dresses suit.
Well, that's the thing about Sorkin is that he's very old school in the way that he writes, in the way that he works. I almost feel like, you know, he's like one of those guys in the 50s who, you know, shows up to work in a suit every day and then, like, you know, only works on a typewriter. I know that he's not like that, but there's something very like old world about him. He likes to work with theater actors. He loves to listen to every rehearsal. There's something very
Listens to all the rehearsals?
He listens and when he's not there on set, he calls in to listen to a rehearsal before we shoot the scene.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really impressive how gentlemanly in that way that he, like, how much he respects the process in that way, which is, you know, very different than a lot of showrunners.
Totally.
Right.
So there's a lot of similarities here. This comes up a lot on this podcast about the similarities between Amy Sherman Palladino's writing and Aaron Sorkin's writing. Because similarly, all the lines in this, everything,
good
period
segue,
marks,
by the way.
The word for word, but it has to be word perfect. There's a dialogue coach on set for every episode, making sure they say there is instead of theirs.
Yeah.
So did you find that in watching the episode and this being your first one? Or
I, you know what? I mean, I found that I actually didn't see a similarity. The only similarity that I see is in the rat-a-tat-tat rhythm of it. But a lot of writers do that now. I mean, like, that's a style that a lot of writers do. I found her writing quite clever in a completely different way than Sorkin's, actually. Like, you know, Sorkin is clever in his own way, but the way that she constructs dialogue, I found different.
Right, the construction is different.
Yeah.
I guess it's just the methodology.
Yeah.
Would be similar of like it must be this word and then this word. Yeah.
But there was a lot of jokes. Like it was a joke on top of a joke on top of a joke, in the way that she constructed her dialogue, which I was very impressed by.
Yeah, I mean, I think umlauts is the biggest like kind of tick 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 boom. Kind of joke we've had on the show so far, where it's like, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Or that, or Cheshire Cat. Oh, that's not really a joke. That's just kind of a reference.
Yeah.
But so there's a lot to love in this episode in general. Of course, Emily's like my favorite character, so I love everything having to do with her. Rory's plot is not good.
No.
It's not a good story.
Wait, which one's Rory?
Rory is Lorelai's daughter.
She's looking for a study spot. Right.
Alexis Bledel.
And it is, and you know, the show kind of calls it out at one point.
Right.
Where Lorelai's like, you're not two. Go to a library.
Right.
Stop. Yeah. Calm down. And so it's weird, and especially during it was such a weird contrast in this episode with like, everything that was interesting was happening in Stars Hollow or with Emily and Richard in Hartford or whatever. But like that was all the interesting stuff. And then everything in Yale just seemed like kind of a drag.
Yeah.
Another Sorkin connection, actually, the guy at the tree sitting down reading his Trucker magazine with the
amazing
MacGyver.
With his hair. That hair is awesome.
Yeah, it's Richard
I mean,
Dean
it's awesome
Anderson
in all
hair.
The ways that I don't want that hair, but like it's like
so
it's awesome.
Good. Totally. So that actor's name is Jason, I want to say Wiedner or Widener.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how to pronounce his name. He played Jed Bartlett on The West Wing.
Really?
In a flashback episode.
Really?
Season 2, the season 2 finale, Two Cathedrals, and he played Jed Bartlett in all the flashbacks for that. Because when I saw it again, I was like, it was bugging me what he was from. but that was his other big role. So there's another
Sorkin
Palladino connection.
Wow.
The Sorkadinos.
Miss Palladino, I am available for any role that you'd like to cast me in.
Yes.
Come on. Season 8.
Season 8. Right. We're really trying to make season 8 happen. Right. Again, guys, that hashtag is. Do you remember it?
No. That's the problem.
It's hashtag. And we got like a couple hundred retweets on it. It's hashtag Gilmore Girls
season 8
on Netflix. Another streaming provider is acceptable.
No, another streaming provider, HBO, is acceptable.
Oh, yeah. So again, it's super simple.
Right.
Hashtag Gilmore Girls season 8 on Netflix or another streaming provider, HBO, is acceptable.
We think. That's it.
I'm pretty
sure.
That
is awesome.
Yeah.
It's not going to go anywhere. But
if you look at on Twitter, there's so many. There's so many tweets with that hashtag.
That's awesome.
I'm very proud of that. I like Emily's line. I love that it's okay to be Russian again.
Oh, yeah. I laughed so hard at that. Was that a McCarthyism joke?
Sounded like the Red Scare.
Was it the Red Scare? Was it the Cold War? I don't know.
I have no idea. It was just some sort of like, Russians used to be bad, but now they're hot.
There's so many Emily lines I clipped out from this episode.
I think it's cute.
Or that was her making
fun. But you're running an insurance company, not a rap label.
Oh yeah.
Uh-oh.
Not a rap label.
She's
right, though.
Yeah.
One of my favorites that really nails the chemistry between Lorelai and Emily is just all of the conversation at the dinner table and the teaser. Yeah.
Flying, thumping balls all over the place.
Flying, thumping what all over the place?
Balls.
Balls.
You are 4.
Somebody's 2 and she is 4.
Yeah, somebody's 2 had a lot
Emily? No, not Emily.
Rory
is 2 and she is 4.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which sounds about right.
Right. They are half each other's age.
I wonder if that was intentional. Also, did you notice in that scene we got the return of Richard's laugh?
I think it might be time to go after their ball machine.
He's got that classic laugh.
I love Eddie Herman.
That we last heard in... I don't have the clips.
I might have it.
Oh.
Maybe. Fill for time.
Do, 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 do.
Oh, wow. You're worse at filling for time than I am.
That's true.
I could never find it since they're not labeled, but it's something like...
Oh, also, is Kirk a Republican? He brings a bunch of novelty mailboxes to Lorelai to check out. A
bunch of Republican mailboxes.
One of them is George W. Bush. One of them is Condoleezza Rice.
That he wants to fill her mouth with things.
Yeah.
He's like, he says, I'm a big fan of Condoleezza Rice. Her big mouth. Like, the way he says it is what is...
Yeah, he really...
I just want to, like, as a newbie, I just want to just say publicly... I'm obsessed with Kirk.
Oh.
Kirk is amazing.
Kirk is great.
Kirk is the best.
Kirk is kind of like...
I fell in love.
He's almost like, not to be too on the nose, but he's kind of like the Kenneth of Gilmore Girls. Yeah. In that, like, he's totally out there, but there's a grounding to it that holds all the wackiness of the show together and all the quirkiness. Also, another 30 Rock alum, Condoleezza Rice.
True. Was on our show. That's right.
Yet another thing you and Condoleezza Rice have in common.
Didn't she play the flute or something like that?
Yeah, she had like a flute battle or something. It was pretty great.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. So everything with Kirk's storyline, I mean, it sounded like, because we just all watched it together.
I was so delighted.
It sounded like we all loved everything to do with
absolutely.
Because first of all, it's like, finally, after seasons of Kirk just... falling on his little butt over and over again.
Something goes right for him.
Failing.
Goes right for
he
him.
Gets a little win.
And as I said to you guys when I was watching it with you, I really am... I'm actually... This is going to sound a little perverted. I'm actually giggling just thinking about him having sex.
Which he wanted to do in this episode.
Right.
He wanted to go up to Luke's apartment.
How much for the room upstairs? What is he like?
I just like that. There's just something
What's
really funny
about
that.
What's the best case scenario that happened?
Luke is like $1,000. I'll take it.
I'll take it.
Good grief.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
So all the business of him scoping out the place and Luke like
that was
begrudgingly.
All super frustrating. And then when it went well, I was like, even when he walks in wearing a suit and like is like, oh, table for two. I was like, this isn't as bad. Like, it's not as nervous as I would expect him to be.
You'd expect him to just be falling down.
I was like, oh, this is going to be a train wreck.
It's an unexpected storyline that I really like. Yeah, it kind of veered in a way that you didn't.
It was sort of adorable when he's just like freaking out, like, this is going way better than
she hasn't left yet.
Yeah. I've gone to the bathroom three times and she's been there every time.
I'm telling you, I kind of fell in love with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's wonderful. And spoiler alert, Lulu's here to stay.
I was about to say, good. I was like, he needs a permanent win, not some sort of fake win where we never see her again.
He needs to be laid regularly.
Yeah.
On the regs.
On the regs.
Oh, man.
Are you on the pill? Or?
Oh, my God.
My Obama is Kirk. Great.
Your Obama is Kirk.
Now, look.
Now, Lulu, I expected you to be gone when I came back from the bathroom.
I'm Ducky. From Pretty in Pink.
I haven't seen the full movie, but I just got to the Try a Little Tenderness scene.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Kirk, how much for the room upstairs? Luke, I mean.
He's talking to himself.
Yeah,
he's dark
practicing acting
here.
For the room. He's practicing asking for the room upstairs.
Oh, man. But yeah, I'm happy for him.
Yeah,
it's been a long time coming, and it makes it so like, because there's certain characters you see on certain TV shows where it's like, man, they can't catch a break. And after a certain time, it becomes cruel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it becomes like, oh,
yes, that's really
this
true.
Is sad.
I see that in TV a lot where there's a threshold where you're just like, now you're just being masochistic to this character.
Yeah.
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 So they're serving him well in this. Yeah. And we're happy for Kirk. We're happy for Lulu and all their crazy, freaky sex they're going to have.
Sex
it's funny because Lulu and Kirk's couple name could be Luke.
Yeah.
Luke. And I'm sure I would love for them to point that out and Luke just be like, you can't go by that.
No, wouldn't it be Lurk?
It could be Lurk or if they have to go Lou and Lurk. Yeah.
Lurk.
Nah, Luke's better. Sorry.
Kalu.
But okay, so here. And then the other kind of big heart of this episode is everything to do with Emily and Lorelai, the catering of it, all the business, all the hoops they have to jump through, which is not crazy, by the way. Like, they have a tasting, and she's not, like, out of her mind. Like, Lorelai builds it up to be so much worse. And even, like, what I love about Melissa McCarthy's performance on the show in general, other than like it's a totally different character than what we get to see mostly now, is how, in a way that feels totally earned, she is so optimistic and happy about everything. So like when the maid comes to the door and then slams the door in their face and says, servant's entrance is in the back, slam. Like, Suki's kind of smiling. She's like, wow, it's so big, you know.
Was that a maid?
She's
delighted.
Yeah.
I can't believe she's never been there before.
And the joy is so earned. Yeah, no, in 3.5 seasons, she's never been there.
It's insane to me.
Why would she have been there? I mean, Lane's never been there.
I have a little bit of logic that I might just be applying too much literal logic to to an episode. So forgive me for being ridiculous.
You're forgiven.
But wouldn't you prepare all the tarts after the tasting in case she doesn't like them?
Yes.
Well, I thought my thought behind it was like she's trying to make the perfect tart and she's in search of that.
She keeps making it over and over again.
Yeah, I didn't think that at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe I'm wrong.
But, you know, I don't know. Sometimes you just have to shut up and enjoy it.
Also,
and you would have got that classic tarted up bedroom scene with Rory.
That was insane. That just didn't. How close is her bedroom to the kitchen that they were like, this makes sense. We can put this here. Because I feel like it's upstairs.
Wait,
no,
Rory's bedroom.
It was like right off
no,
the
Rory's
kitchen.
Bedroom has always been right off the kitchen.
All right.
Uh oh.
I don't know where things are in this universe.
Did you notice that Digger was in the credits in this episode?
Yes, I did. Cool. I specifically paid attention.
Which, again, is weird. And he wasn't in the credits in the last episode. It's only the episodes that he's in.
Oh,
that he's in the opening credits. Yeah.
That's a thing in contracts, in actor.
That's so weird, though.
It's weird just because, like...
It's like custom credits.
But it's not like he's freaking, you know... Someone. Kevin Bacon.
No, but...
You know?
But I mean, like, such, like, nerdy, boring actor.
I love
things.
It. That's what people listen.
But I don't... I'm not sure about series regulars versus recurring characters, but there is a level, a tier in your contract where you can where it's an important negotiation point where your name appears in the credits whether you're in the episode or not. Versus
right.
only appearing mm-hmm. when you're in the episode,
right?
And that's a negotiation point, and how actors kind of get their name out there, and blah 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 blah,
right?
That stuff. So
because I'm sure this was great for him.
Oh, yeah,
I guess that was the thing.
Yeah,
but and I guess they must have fallen in love with the character so much. We should have asked Mara and Jamie about that.
Yeah,
casting him. We had the casting directors of this show on the podcast
awesome.
And talked to them about like their process for a bunch of different people.
I don't think he was in the
but
episode.
But if he was recurring, then he probably negotiated.
He wasn't recurring. The very first episode he was in, the main credit. So it was like, whoa, who's this guy?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he must have hardballed it or something. I don't know.
I mean, and or maybe like just the writing of the episode reduced his. You know, they're just like, well, we don't need you in every episode now, and so we're gonna. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of little, but that's an actor's name appearing in every episode or only appearing in the episodes that they're in is a thing
totally
in a contract. Yeah.
Yeah, I assume so. I'm so curious as to we always talk about this.
Yeah,
just about the contract, not like how much did you make, but just like what was the contractual because like. Kelly Bishop, Emily Gilmore is not in every single episode of the show.
Right.
You know, she's in the main credits every time.
And she's in the main credits every time.
Right. Yeah. And she, what a treasure. Yeah. What a gift. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now let's talk about your social battery. Maybe right now it's bursting at the seams with energy. Maybe it's a little drained. Maybe you're one of those people like my friend with their phone battery that keeps it 2% all the time, even when they stay home all day. And they definitely could charge up if they wanted to, but they don't. Well, regardless of where it is, it's important to understand why it is the way it is. Why is the battery low when it gets low? Is it because you're feeling less social? Is it because you're feeling sad? Is it because of emotions you've yet to identify? Or maybe just boundaries you haven't set for yourself yet? Either way, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, maybe you don't. Maybe you need a little more alone time. Well, either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. This is so important because I've been in therapy for 10 plus years, for some would say, technically, 11 years this month, and it's helped me so much understand where I get my energy from, how I use my energy, how to better use my energy, and how to maintain things in a way that's sustainable and healthy and good. And that's to do, of course, with boundaries, but also just understanding who I am and what I want. And I couldn't have done so much of that work without therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GilmoreGuys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GilmoreGuys.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
This show would not work without
Kelly Bishop.
Oh, no, definitely.
If you think about it, because the way more interesting arc, at least for the first couple of seasons, for the first four or five seasons, is Lorelai's journey with Emily and the way their relationship evolves and changes or grows or doesn't, but just that conflict there.
Yeah.
Whereas her and Rory are pretty much, you know, everything's fine for the most part.
Yeah.
But if you did not like that person at all, like what's great about Emily is that maybe other people don't, but I have a lot of reasons to like her. Like I have a lot of reasons to be like, oh no, she's fine. Like right. Lorelai, yeah. You're being insane.
And, well, I know a lot of women like that in my life.
Right.
So, yeah. yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
If there wasn't that humanizing element to it at all, then you would just hate her, and then the stories wouldn't be interesting at all. The scene that we talked about before that Keith mentioned of Emily coming to Lorelai's place after she's been all but defeated by Digger's terrible idea to go to Atlantic City with these like 60-year-old businessmen.
It's Las Vegas. That's the plot.
Yeah.
We're talking about Morgan Freeman.
Michael Douglas and the gang.
Yeah. So instead of Las Vegas,
take a bottle of Viagra and some tequila and get lost for the weekend.
Grief. So then she goes over and she's like,
I'm sorry, Lorelai. I really am. I thought your table was lovely. I thought the food was wonderful. I was really looking forward to this party. I think it might have been the best one I ever put on.
So then what happened?
Oh, you know, times change, Lorelai. Things that were once considered proper and elegant are now considered stuffy and out of date.
Like what?
Like canapes and cocktail parties and the people who plan them.
She's defeated. She speaks real softly and like... No, your father and I decided to go
a
different way.
Which is heartbreaking.
It's very heartbreaking. And what I also really admired about that, see, I'm such a like acting nerd and things like that. But what I really admired about that scene is how they didn't make it precious. They didn't make it special. She came in, she delivered her information, and she left.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't try to milk the scene for, you know, my heart's really broken over this.
Mm-hmm. No emotional music or anything.
Yeah, and I really appreciated that, and it actually made it that much more heartbreaking to see.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's something they do a lot on this show, is they... One of the methods that people use for like delivering jokes is like they say, oh, throw it away. Like, don't make it blah, 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 blah. Like they say, throw it away, throw away this line, underplay it. That's probably like a lot of thesis behind acting in indie movies. But what I like on this show is that for those big scenes and for the big dramatic stuff, it's still the same. Yeah. There's not like the like underlining of it.
Yeah.
Like it would be in another show where it's like, all right, bring up the Maroon 5 close up on Emily.
Right.
Just everything's the same.
I believe it's now Run One Republic.
Yes.
Right. Sorry, got it.
One Republic, two One Direction. I was trying to think of more.
Like all the numbered bands.
Maroon R5. Five.
What's that?
Is that boy band R5?
Yeah.
Oh, that our friend of the show, Caleb Worthy, is he in it?
Or He's not in it. Other people in his show are in it.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
No.
Crazy town. But yeah, that they don't make too much of a meal.
Crazy town music.
Yeah, they don't make a meal of it, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
She had so many good lines. I'm just going to play a few of them.
There are mobsters in Atlantic City.
Mobsters in Atlantic City.
And mobsters.
There are mobsters.
Rap labels and mobsters.
You had the word juicy on your rear end.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
I love especially that before getting to her emotional like spiel, she says that like, she's what was it, a brassiere with a tasty on it? And then she's like,
bra with tasty
on
it.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
And then, one thing I did like about the Yale stuff, if anything, is just this guy's cameo.
Irish studies suck. German studies suck. Everything here sucks.
That now, dude's that's, definitely a musical theater
actor. That's yes. a character named Glenn, who is recurring on the show. He's part of the Breakfast Crew.
Really?
Marty's infamous Breakfast Crew.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Wow. I feel like that should be my ringtone now.
Well, I'll give it to you, and it can be. Also, now it's time for a segment we call... Yo, is this homophobic?
Oh, before we start the segment, I'd just like to say it is.
Okay.
Continue.
You can't just waltz into people's lives and take over.
I don't waltz at all. It's embarrassing and a little gay.
Yes. Yeah. Straight up.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. try again, do better, that,
that's
Amy.
A segment in this show, so like every, there's lots of episodes.
There's
that...
a few where there's like some really? Weirdly yeah. homophobic. And I guess it's... I don't know if, like, if you looked at sitcoms from the same era, maybe not dramas, like, similar dramas to, like, Seventh Heaven or Everwood. Yeah. I almost said Underwood. It's a different drama.
Some drama at all?
It's a character on drama.
By the way, uh-oh. Everwood, Treat Williams, is quite the gentleman.
You got to work with him?
Yes. Oh. And I just want to give that shout out because I haven't talked to him in years, and I just had a fond memory of Treat. That's all.
Shout out to Big Stars Holla to Treat Williams.
Yeah.
Keith sorry. Powell says he is a treat and a delight.
He is a treat. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Anyway.
Oh, but if you look at sitcoms from that same era, I wonder if you would find as much borderline homophobia to straight up homophobia in the jokes.
Like it's a Republican regime, and probably this is around the time that Bush was running. Oh God, I'm going political now.
Yeah, let's do it. This is 2003, yeah, so this is before so Bush this Kerry.
This was before Bush Kerry.
Yeah,
but
so
this
it's 2003.
Is, but in 2003 he was beginning his campaign for his second term,
mm-hmm.
and that was around the time that he excited his base by being homophobic.
Hmm.
That is how Bush won his second election.
But oddly enough, there's so many, like, in contrast to that, there's so many, as the show goes on, anti-Bush jokes.
Good.
Well, they're actually...
Sorry. Dude, oh, God. That was so involuntary.
Look, Bush is going to be...
By the way...
Bush, listen to this podcast.
I have a lot
pissed.
Of Republican friends. They're all wonderful people.
I can
people.
Say that. I have a friend who's a Republican. Okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, but even in the premiere episode, there's a joke about Bush girl. Then the second episode
right.
there, of this season, there's a joke about Bush on his ranch. And then there's a joke... I think there is... There might be an Abu Ghraib joke in five or six.
There is. I think that it might have already happened.
Abu Ghraib?
I'm pretty sure.
No, because this is before
is it?
Iraq.
I feel like I've talked about Abu Ghraib in reference to this show very recently, and I'm like, that was weird because something...
Oh, no. On the season finale, we said it'd be funny if when they say, oh, Rory, it's not so scary anymore about our school, but if she was at, like, Guantanamo Bay. Oh,
okay.
That's how we referenced it.
Yeah. I was like, I don't talk about Abu Ghraib that often. I don't know what it would have been.
Yeah, nor do I.
Yeah. That was awful.
Oh, boy.
So bad. But, yeah, they do make those jokes. So it's a liberal show.
Yeah, but I feel like it, you know, in a way, homophobia is in the air. And I bet you that it's very casual for them, that they don't even know that they're being homophobic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because we're looking at it now, you know, through a modern prism.
Mm-hmm.
I always believe that a culture, the American culture, is always defined by its president. And we are now in a very activist society. We are now in a very, you know, like, stand up and have a cause for everything, because that is the way that Obama has gotten elected, and we, I feel like, have subconsciously taken that on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, in a way, that I feel like the homophobia was subconsciously taken on during the Bush years.
There's probably a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's been a segment we call
is this homophobic?
And the verdict this time was yes.
We got a little too real there.
Yeah. No, there's no such thing as too real on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. What other story points did we want to go through?
Just skipping to the ending. I hate that she paid $20 for that tree.
Okay, so that's,
I hate it a lot.
Here's the message of this show. in Rory's regard,
money
pay
talks.
People off.
Feel entitled to everything.
Right.
Yes.
And if it doesn't go your way, use money to make it happen.
It really is just
that is awful.
Yeah. And yeah. Also, $20 is a lot for a tree.
And for a college student who has no job.
Right. Who is agreeing to pay her parents back, so she's probably going, or her grandparents back.
Yeah.
First of all, start with five. Start with one, even, and then just go like
negotiate,
five.
Negotiate, Rory. Right. That's all we're saying.
She needs to take negotiate. A business course. Everything about that, the tree part, bothered me.
I agree.
Even when she asks him nicely, I was like, that's a bit entitled. And then he's rude. And I was like, okay, that's still really rude of you. And then I was like, still, you don't deserve it. But like, this is entire thing. There is no winners here.
Go to a coffee shop. Go to a library. Yeah.
Find another tree that has the same back support and distance from, I don't know.
So dumb. I wonder if they did that on purpose.
To make Rory sound entitled? Maybe
yeah.
She...
You know what I mean? Because I think there's so many things, especially coming up on this show, where it's like, oh, these aren't good people. But it's not played in an anti-hero sort of way where it's like, oh, it's Don Draper making bad decisions. It's like a casual sort of bad decision being made on an episode-to-episode basis, which I actually think is smart, and it does age the show well because, like we talked about before, it doesn't underline and say, like, oh, what a jerk she's being. It's like, oh, you know, make your judgment.
Exactly.
So the premise of the show is that these are descendants of very wealthy people and going to Yale. And so that is the way the show is created.
So the central premise or conceit of the show is that Lorelai, the mother, broke off from her family when she got pregnant when she was 16, had Rory, grew up in Stars Hollow, the small town where they're at, and Luke's diner is at, and raised Rory there. But when Rory wanted to go to a private school, Chilton, for high school, she needed money, so she approached the grandparents, so they had an arrangement for Friday night dinners every week to get back in their lives. And then when she went to college, Rory had an agreement for Friday night dinners again.
So it is about, you know, actually, it actually makes me like the tree story that now. Because knowing that as the premise, it seems like it is a show about privilege versus struggling, versus finding your own way and figuring your own way out in life, which seems like the whole point of the show.
Yeah, because I think you see Rory at the beginning of this series as a pretty normal kid. She's super brainy, super smart, and super perfect in a lot of ways that are kind of annoying. But then I think really starting in this season, you see the kind of over-the-top perfections of her character break down in a way that's super earned and super realistic. So yeah, she's like, I'll give you money. And then she continues to make decisions that are not great and put herself in positions that aren't good either. And I think without the first half of the series being that and being like kind of working class, then that wouldn't make sense. But you do see a transformation. Right. She starts dating a guy that's more of a privileged world.
Right.
And so it's an interesting world to explore.
I actually then, it makes me really very much admire that tree storyline, because I think that it sounds as if that tree storyline is laying the groundwork for her dating this privileged guy that's eventually she's going to date.
Planting the seeds, you would say?
Planting the seeds. And I think that's a good storyline.
Laying the roots. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. And I think, yeah, maybe they knew what they were doing with this. They were like, let's have Rory be kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Or maybe not.
You know, I mean,
it also could just be like, here's a fun storyline. Doesn't matter. Just whatever. No moral here.
Right.
So Ariana Peake for our Twitter Q&A, she said, are the door opening and closing sound effects driving anyone else completely bonkers? I think they start in season 4. So if you notice, and it's something I know, it's definitely on the rewatch too, whenever Rory goes in and out of her room at the dorm, there is such a weird tacked on sound effect to the door opening and closing that does not sound like it's a part of the environment at all.
Like a yuck.
They had an overzealous sound guy.
This is my moment.
I'm going to win an Emmy.
Finally, I'll show them all.
Best Foley goes to
Dave Foley. Whoa. Right. The Dave Foley artist.
I just imagine he gets up from his seat to walk down. They show his like award-winning clip, and it's just her closing the door.
Yeah. But in slow motion. Yeah. They show it from five different angles. At Alexa Lisciardello, I want to say Lisciardello, maybe. She asked, Kevin, did you cry during the Emily and Lorelai scene?
Yeah,
yeah, I did. Monica Gallagher just says, woof, Jason.
Wait, which one is Jason?
Jason's Digger. Yeah.
Oh, so as in woof as in hot or woof as in ugh, ugly?
Like oof, yeah. I think. Nor okay. Not ugly, I think just like despicable.
Yeah, well, despicable.
Because let's talk about that. How he's like, oh, I didn't know. He's like slickstering with Lorelai.
Yeah.
And then he asks her out in the middle of that.
And she's kind of into it.
And she's kind of into it.
That might be grosser.
It's a little rapey.
You think it's rapey?
Maybe rapey might be a little too going too far.
He seems like he just seems like that kind of a guy.
Yeah. But it's a little bit like, go out with me, it'll piss off your mom. And she goes,
it's a manipulation.
Yeah. Oh, it's a little manipulative. Yeah. Rapey is the wrong word. But
he's definitely a gross
dude. We've talked about rapey stuff on this show before.
Yeah.
In detail.
It's a little manipulative. And I don't know. I mean,
from the second like she walks in and he's like, oh, I would have called you back if I know you look like that. I'm just like, ugh.
Gross, though. Yeah, I know.
It's like a wolf in a Disney cartoon.
Yes.
He is like a wolf in a
dude. Ooh. Like, that's what I imagine.
Here's also what I'm curious about. Chris Eggman, because in the first episode he was in, which was
402.
Was it 402? Yeah. So he didn't have facial hair. And then this one, they make brief mention of the beginning, like, oh, I see you're trying out a beard, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it's like, was the actor...
Maybe
like,
he was growing a beard for another part.
Oh, man.
Maybe.
Perhaps. I mean, that would make sense. But like, she's like, oh, I see you're growing a weird-looking goatee. Great.
It's like, I'm in high demand now that I'm on your show. I need to, spread my wings.
At Clown Pillow says...
Oh, great.
Asks, what's the worst thing you could find your room covered in? Off experience, I'd say blood. Colored yarn.
There's a clown pillow in this show, and now it has a Twitter account. And sometimes
if you look at the clown, if you look at the living room closely in Lorelai's house, there's a weird looking clown pillow.
It's always staring at the camera, by the way.
And in response to this podcast, he started a Twitter account, and now he tweets from it.
that is a creepy clown pillow.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like the clown from American Horror Story or something. Yeah. the creepiest thing to find in the living or your room covered in. Yeah, blood.
Blood would be creepy.
Right.
Blood's pretty creepy.
Is there anything else that would be creepier?
Clown pillows.
Yeah, covered in clown pillows.
Just mini clown pillows.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so at page F, the one with four A's in it, she says this is maybe the first instance of Rory acting as entitled as Lorelai when someone's sitting at her study tree.
Yeah.
Which is fair, because Lorelai does have an entitlement that she wish that she walks with a lot, especially in Stars Hollow when she's
Lorelai.
Treated like a queen. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oftentimes.
I was about to say I didn't see that in this episode, so maybe that's why.
No, definitely not. I mean, everything with the catering storyline and stuff, other than entitled isn't what the word I would use to describe her in this episode. Maybe just difficult and overly dramatic, certainly with her mother.
Totally.
Without cause.
Yeah. Totally.
All the business with the flyer. I do like the line. How dare you lie to me about a flyer? That's the worst thing you could say.
She loves to catch Lorelai in lies and just like drag it out as long as
she
can.
So fun. Yeah. That's my favorite,
that's
though.
Really,
I'm surprised she didn't like say like as she showed up, but just like, oh, do you have the flyer?
Yeah.
Okay, so Katie Henderson asks, if you were catering for Emily, what would you whip up? Or make, I think, is the slang.
Lobster quiche.
Lobster quiche?
Caviar quiche.
Baked brie.
I would do Go-Gurt. I would get a bunch of packets of Go-Gurt and Go-Gurt. Put them on plates.
You know that she would...
Lancy.
At first she'd be like, this is terrible. And then just like, she'd taste and be
What's that accent?
This is terrible. Terrible.
Sure.
And then as soon as she like goes for the taste test, she's like, you know, this is actually kind of genius. It's just yogurt. But it's in a convenient pouch that I can carry anywhere.
Oh, just like when she was losing her mind eating the pizza.
Frozen pizza she loved.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. I know. There is a, spoiler alert, there is a scene later this this season where she goes to a food court in a mall.
Oh, hell
and
yeah.
It's pretty spectacular.
Manchu Walk, Panda Express, they've got it all here. Auntie Anne's. Auntie Anne's. Can I get 2 cinnamon buns?
I'll have 3 Wetzel's pretzels. So there's a lot of there's a
Laura,
lot of
have you ever
cover.
Heard of a wiener schnitzel?
Lou Woodcock asks, anyone else wonder what Kirk ended up doing with those mailboxes?
He
stuffing
them.
Her mouth with things.
Oh gosh.
<don't know>.
Uh oh.
Yeah.
Good
he
grief.
Couldn't rent out the apartment, so he used the mailbox.
Nice.
Boom.
Nice.
Yikes. Oh, poor Kirky. Well, now he won't have to because he's got Lulu.
Oh,
that's true.
Isn't that so sweet?
Yeah.
And she's so cute.
She's
that
adorable.
Actress is so
yeah,
cute.
Yeah, well, I mean, from what little I saw in this episode, she was adorable.
Yeah, they work well together.
Yeah.
So, any other stray observations before we rate the episode?
I noted a few just things that... Oh, Rory's professor is the principal from Even Stevens.
Really?
Yeah.
Also, why are all the professors, not that I'm complaining, why are all the professors at the school black?
Because they haven't had any black characters.
Because there's no black people on that show.
Yeah. There's been...
That is what...
There's one.
No, okay. What were you going to say?
No, I mean, that's what they do. And like, they go, oh, we don't have any black people? Make them smart.
There is. We get a lot of we've gotten a lot of complaints in the past because we used to hypothesize
by
the lack of minorities in the show, and then like people were like, "Oh, you're forgetting one who was like a main cast member
who is not in this."
So now I'm going to tokenize it, and you know because we did one, it's like I have a black friend,
right?
So now I'm not racist. I have a black friend.
All the teachers in this show are black, though. I'm just noticing.
Except for
that
Max
now.
Medina.
Wait, hang on now because. Yeah, except for Max Medina's. The principal that hated Jess and was very happy to see him go. The college professor, when Rory wandered into that class in 204, the road trip to Harvard.
It's
and then these guys.
It's a writer's. It's on a
fireman chief.
I'm going to tell you, I mean, in a business sense, what happens with that, it's not a coincidence. What happens with that is that there's a diversity director at every network. And the diversity person probably went to them and said, you don't have enough black people on the show. And in order to make themselves feel better, that they put them in a what they consider to be a non-stereotypical part, which is educated.
Yeah, but then that's become a new stereotype.
And then that's it's obnoxious and in its own way a little, you know, racist. But that's what happens is that right then they just put them in the
educated. So is that like a new stereotype now?
It's not so much a new stereotype as it is like an attempt to reverse the stereotype without actually doing anything to help.
Without actually doing anything because you know, newsflash, black people have been educated for many hundreds of years.
Long time.
For thousands of years.
For at least a little bit.
A little bit of
but, you know, they think it's a novel thing so that they can only give them a certain amount of lines that are not a lot, but they go, but I made them smart.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like it's a shield, not so much a solution.
It's a shield, not a solution. That's good.
Wow. Well,
sorry to get so political.
I think we solved diversity.
We did.
Yeah.
We did it.
Malcolm X and Martin Luther died for this very podcast.
Well, I do notice that trend where it's like, oh, if we cast a person of color, let's make them the one in charge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like even.
It's a shield.
I don't know.
I love that now. It's a shield.
I don't know if it counts, but like the president on 24, would that be an example of that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't watched 24. I don't know. I just said yes involuntarily.
You're very agreeable.
I feel like we just turned into like Bill Maher's show or something.
Yeah, I know. First of all, I'm obsessed with politics, so I will turn any show into Bill Maher.
Oh, hell yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
Oh, we're going to tell it like it is on this show.
Yeah.
And another thing. No, I'm kidding. The Tom Cruise diss, even though I disagree with it because I love Tom Cruise.
I actually think Tom Cruise is a very good actor.
Yeah, I think he's a great actor.
I haven't seen a movie of his... probably ever. I didn't see Rock of Ages, where I was like, this movie is terrible and Tom Cruise is bad in it. Well, even Night and Day, like, he was good in.
I
Night and Day?
Oh, wow.
I have a story about Night and Day.
Oh, boy.
What is it?
We went to see Night and Day. My mom got sick, and I was like, good, let's leave. And that's the only movie I've ever left midway. And then I still went back 2 years later to watch it again just because I couldn't let go of the fact that I hadn't finished a movie.
Wow.
Night and Day.
It frustrates me.
That's so funny.
I think Tom Cruise, what I like about Tom Cruise is that he knows his limitations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's very important, very good skill for an actor to have.
Unlike Bradley Cooper. Walking around like he's limitless or something.
God. What? I saw it coming. I was like, I'm not going to let you get there. Yeah, he's limitless.
Oh, brother.
Did you see he's going to be in the TV show Limitless too?
Yeah, I don't know. That's such a weird move. I don't know why.
I think it was a way to get the show on the air.
Yeah.
Oh, that's probably a good point.
You know, like for instance, Alec.
Bedwin
did not, wasn't contracted to do 30 Rock beyond the pilot. And it was a way to get the show on the air, and then he renegotiated to be on it every week.
Wow,
good.
I think that's a Bradley Cooper
thing. I could talk to you for 5 hours about 30 Rock, and I would love to, but it's not.
We'll
that
save
podcast.
It for a 30 Rock podcast.
30 Rockers. Oh man. Yeah. Hey, we didn't do fashion report. Let's just do it real quick. We'll do it real quick.
Fashion.
So Lorelai has a white button-up shirt that has like a weird Ed Hardy pattern on it. Did you guys notice this?
I didn't notice it, but she has a lot of those.
Okay, so she has that. I want them to dress Paris better. We finally gotten her out of the children's school girl outfit she was in for the first 3 years, but now let's do something with it. Like she's wearing those gross like pink pants and like a weird brown top.
Yeah,
not feeling it.
I think that's the same brown jacket she wore to the Bengals concert.
Was it actually?
I think so.
Hmm.
I might be wrong.
Interesting. Also, I noticed that Rory's collar that she was wearing with her jean jacket,
yeah,
it just seemed really big. Is that like a trend from that time?
I think that is the transition from 90s clothing into modern clothing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Part of the silhouette is changing. In that one.
Jean on the outside, collar on the inside.
Yep.
correct, yes.
Not digging Dicker's tie. Didn't think that was so good.
He looks so weird when he's not wearing a suit. Like when he's in his office, I was just like, you look exhausted.
His suit. Yeah, I agree.
Something was off.
Kirk's suit just looks like freaking Saul Goodman.
He looks good in a suit.
Yeah.
I think so.
You think he looks good in a suit?
I think he looked put together.
I felt like the suit looked pretty cheap.
It might have been a cheap suit, but just seeing Kirk in anything that looked put together, I was like, good on you. Plus, he's got a new haircut for the past few episodes, but still.
Yeah, for this season. Yeah. Any other fashion things?
Rory has like this striped yarn shirt that she wears in the beginning, and it just reminded me of like a babysitter.
Well, if you look close enough, it's actually a Magic Eye thing.
Oh,
you,
great.
Yeah, you can see like a horse.
I love it.
And of course, we got MacGyver hair at the tree.
Oh,
those trucks.
Oh, that MacGyver dude. Hair. Who loves trucks?
Old Lil Jed Bartlett.
Yeah, little Richard Dean Anderson.
It makes no sense for like a dude just to be reading truck magazines
on the Yale campus. I'm going to go to Yale and read about trucks.
Yeah,
that just there's something doesn't connect.
Who knows?
I like to believe that that's like Dean's cousin.
Some way, somehow.
Yeah.
Is that all?
I think so.
All right.
Fashion.
Let's go ahead and rate the episode then. And the way this works is we all go in a circle and we rate it something out of 10 something. Something from the episode or our conversation about it. And it has to change with each one of us.
Oh,
so I super enjoyed it because Emily was the heart of it and her pain. And I think all the funny stuff worked really well. I love Suki. I thought Suki looked so beautiful in this episode, by the way.
Yeah, she did.
She looked great. Melissa McCarthy just looked spectacular and 8 months pregnant.
Yeah.
But not actually pregnant, IRL. Great episode. It all worked for me. Rory's plotline was annoying, but kind of maybe necessary for her arc.
Yeah.
So annoying on like on a reality level, but probably good on a story level.
Right.
So I'm going to give it 9 out of 10. Broccoli tarts.
I really, really liked the Emily storyline, even though I hated Digger's involvement and I wish that I kind of wish, like, I mean, it's one of those situations where everything could have been fixed by this, but, like, obviously that's not true to the plot. It's not necessary for conflict. But I wish that Emily had just told Jason about the party as soon as she started planning it, or Richard had, or anything. But
right, but to me, that's not annoying in the way that we talk about, like, oh, just talk and have a conversation. Right, right. Because that was more of a logistical thing rather than, like, don't lie.
Yeah.
Like, you know, on Parenthood, yeah. It's like, oh, just don't lie about that exactly. thing you lied about.
It just seems like they got really far in the planning without telling the person the party is for.
Right, but yeah. So there's, like, a little...
Not a big deal.
Yeah.
I didn't like Rory's storyline at all. Like, when she was looking for a place to study, that was fine. But as soon as it got to the tree stuff, I was just like... Like, it was fun to watch, but it was also just like, this is not... Like, this is bad, I feel like. I'm going to give this episode 7 out of 10.
Ooh.
Condoleezza mailboxes.
All right.
True.
I actually really enjoyed it, especially as my first time watching an episode. And I really loved the dialogue. I thought it was very zippy and fun and funny and actually quite entertaining. So, you know, I want to give it an 8. Out of 10 trucker magazines.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Trucker
Monthly. That's what cool dudes...
That's what cool dudes do. Like, yeah.
It's such a weird... It's such like a cartoon of what an obnoxious guy would read.
That is exactly what it is. It's like right out of Central Casting in that way.
But okay, so think about it this way. If he was reading Oliver Twist... Would Roy have fallen in love with him?
Maybe. Should do that with the previous book.
I guess in that way, you're like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Because, like, if he were reading something really deep, we would have been like, oh, God, because he's from Yale. He has to read something really smart. You know?
Yeah.
So I guess you can't win with whatever he's reading.
I didn't even put it together that he was from Yale.
Oh, yeah, maybe he wasn't.
Maybe he wasn't. Oh, no, I assumed he wasn't for some reason.
I just assumed it's just some...
No, that totally makes sense, because why would he be there?
Yeah.
People don't go to campuses that aren't their own just to read.
Yeah. Although, I feel like people do that on the UT campus. Just because it's
open. Well,
that's
a huge campus. Yeah, it's hard to escape. Yeah.
A lot of people do that on the NYU campus, but, you know, homeless men were, like, just crashing on the NYU campus because there was no campus.
Yeah.
It's just buildings everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Guys, we did it. And now it's time for a segment we call...
Where you tweet, I will follow.
Keith, where can we find you, and what do you have to plug?
I am I'm at Keith Powell. Very simple. KEITHPOWELL.
Mm-hmm.
And what do I have to plug? You know, I've been given some money to do a web thing, but I can't talk about that just yet. So
hush, hush.
Stay tuned to the web.
Yeah, stay tuned. Keep following my Twitter handle, and Keith maybe I might say something about it. Oh, no, I know. No. I'm in a movie that is that's now making the festival rounds and will be released in 2016. It's a movie. I'm the star of the movie, and I co-wrote it. It's called My Name is David, and I'm very proud of it. We shot it about 2 years ago, and it's getting a lot of great reception on the festival circuit, so you know, look out for that movie.
Nice. Right on. That's gotta be tough to shoot something that far, that long ago.
This movie making process is crazy. And the post-production, you know, it just took so long because there's a lot of special effects in it, but but you know, it's like it feels like a lifetime ago now. You know,
wow. So check that out, guys, and then you can follow me at Kevin T. Porter on everything and anything.
I'm at Electro Lemon on everything.
Are you?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Okay, so currently Demi's not... Do you not want to talk about this?
It's just not a big deal to me. But sure, let's talk about it.
Demi has a big following on Twitter, but he's not on Twitter right now. He's taking a break, you would say?
Yeah. I just deactivated for a bit.
Yeah, okay. But you do intend to come back.
I think I can't escape, so eventually I will.
Because it's hard, because it's almost necessary for, like, promotion and stuff.
Yeah, and, like, jobs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm. So what was that name again?
Electro Lemon.
Pow! Color coming out of your yin-yang!
At gmail.com.
Pow, color coming out of your yin-yang.
Yeah.
I hope someone registers that and
please,
emails
if,
us.
If somehow you can get that... username. But no, I was just saying email.
Oh, man. Well, guys, we did it. We nailed it.
Yay.
And there's only one thing left to do now. Now, traditionally, Keith.
I'm scared.
At the end of this, at the end of the episode, we all sing the theme song together.
Okay.
Which is difficult to do.
When you've only seen it once.
Right.
But so, it's a Carole King classic, so maybe they've heard it before. But
even if you haven't, you can freestyle anything.
You can freestyle.
You can say just words.
You can rap. You can talk about your political views while we sing.
Oh, that was, yes. Go ahead. Just expose.
Oh, boy.
So whatever you feel, as long as it's true and authentic to you. So here we go.
You're out on the road. Lonely and so cold.
So cold.
Hillary Clinton will run next year.
2016.
Will you guys vote?
Take the White House.
Yeah. I will follow
Hillary on tour there.
Anywhere
that you tell me to. If you need me to be with you, I will follow. Clinton's here. I
She's
will
here.
She'll welcome.
Hello. No, that's not good, Hillary.
You tell me I to, hope. If you need me to be with you, I will follow where you lead.
I like that song.
Goodbye.